Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to the follow-up call for the Palliative and End-of-Life Care Steering Committee to discuss measures that were that needed extra attention as a follow-up from our meeting on July 20th, 21st, and 22nd. I believe those were the dates. We have a full agenda today, and before we get to discussing the agenda, I'd like Lindsay just to take role and make sure we know who's on the call.
Okay. Russell Acevedo. Eduardo Bruera. David Casseret. Robert Fine. Richard Goldstein. Sarah Hill.
Here.
Pam Kalin. Naomi Karp. Mark Linnae.
Here.
Michael Lepore.
Here.
Solomon Lau.
Here.
June Money.
Here.
Stephen Lutz.
Here.
Helene Martel.
Here.
Sean Morrison.
Here.
Naomi Nierman.
Here.
Douglas Nee.
Here.
Kathleen O'Malley.
I'm here.
Tina Peake.
Here.
Tracy Schroepfer.
Here.
Douglas White.
And are there any other guests?
Yeah, Bob Fine. I've signed in, so I think I missed roll call. Sorry.
Okay.
It's Helen Burson from NQF as well.
Okay.
Martha Tecca.
Okay. All right.
Tom Murray, ASCO. Mark
Welcome.
Antman, AMA.
Welcome.
Cindy Morgan,
North Carolina. I'm sorry, can you say that your name again?
Cindy Morgan at the Association for Home and Hospice Care of North Carolina.
Carol Spence from NHPCO.
Becky Van Vorst with Data.
Welcome, everybody. This is Karen Ginsberg from NQF, and I'm here with Lindsay Tai, Eric Colchimero, Heidi Bosley, and Angela Franklin. And as I mentioned, we do have a full agenda discussing first whether there are two measures specifically that need to be reviewed for their status as competing or related measures, an issue having to do with reviewing harmonized pain measures, and then the committee review of four or five other measures for their updated information. I just wanted to make a comment about process. We won't be voting on this call. We'll be discussing the measures according to what the discussion criteria are for today, and then Lindsay will send a SurveyMonkey link for you to vote on the measures. One measure we'll be voting pretty much in full, the data measure on spiritual and religious concerns, documentation of spiritual and religious concerns, because we tabled the voting on that measure until we could discuss on this call. And the others will be voting about whether the additions to the measure submissions were satisfactory for the steering committee. So I'm going to turn the floor or the phone over to our co-chair, Sean and June, to lead the discussion of the measures. Sean?
Sure. June? Sorry. You know, it's hard when you can't see June's face as to who's going to take the lead. So,
come on, Sean.
It's really thank you all for joining us today. We have a relatively very busy agenda, which I hope we'll be able to move through on time. I did, before we move forward to, first of all, does everybody have the agenda in front of them?
Yes.
Great. Okay. So before we move forward on really the tasks at hand, I did want to spend just 30 seconds, because I know there has been a tremendous amount of email traffic, at least to June, to I and our NQF colleagues, about the ASCO measures and some of the process that went along with that. So I just want to take the opportunity really just to explain again sort of where we are and where things stand with that, and really do that sort of very briefly so people are on the same page. As many of you recall, at our face-to-face meeting, there were a number of questions that came up in the morning with regards to the ASCO measures, particularly with respect to were there data available that made these measures suitable for accountability. And the committee went back to ASCO and to the developer on both on that call and in a subsequent call, asking for really specific data elements that would allow this committee to make an informed decision about the measures being presented. Specifically, were there normative standards that ASCO had that would allow these to be moved forward as accountability measures, and data that will allow these to move forward from what they were as surveillance measures, which NQF no longer supports, into measures that could be used for both quality improvement and accountability. And unfortunately, those data were not forthcoming. We at both June and I and the NQF staff really don't know whether those data, A, exist within ASCO, and, B, there were issues in terms of accessing them, or whether the data don't exist at all. And the measure developers were given the opportunity to, again, move the measures forward with appropriate support or withdraw them, and they chose to withdraw them. There isn't really an opportunity, because of the timeline, to readdress those on this particular call for measures, and I think a lot of us feel very badly about that. On the other hand, there will be a subsequent call for cancer-specific measures that NQF is initiating. I think there will be, as there was for this process, an opportunity to put letters of support for appropriate representation on that steering committee and a call for measures. And I think that that is a tremendous opportunity to ensure, or at least potential, to move this forward in a different avenue, in which case they will become, if they get through that process, they will become NQF-endorsed measures, just the same as if they had gone through this committee. I know that's not an ideal situation. I suspect it's not what many of us would want, but unfortunately, that is the situation we're in. Certainly, I can't direct anybody, but if people do have connections with ASCO and do have connections with measurement developers around this, it certainly wouldn't hurt to reach out. Is that a fair, my NQF colleagues, is that a fair summary statement?
This is Heidi Sean, yes, and in fact, I know Tom Murray from ASCO is on, and if he'd like to say anything, we'd be welcome. If he doesn't, that's fine.
Yeah, I didn't want to put Tom on the spot.
I know, I did. I'm sorry. I know Tom.
Okay. We understand that situation, and we are certainly willing to work with you however we can to get these measures through.
That would be fantastic, Tom. And as I said, I think all of us are, both thankful that there will be an oncology call for measures, and B, the opportunity to get some palliative care representation on that committee, and to speaking not as a chair, but as a palliative care researcher, to the extent that we can help get these together so that they can get through, would be very, very beneficial for the field and for our patients. So,
and we've gotten great NQF support from the staff in working with that, and plan to continue working closely with you all.
Thanks, Tom. As I said, I did not want to put you on the spot, but thank you. Any burning issues or questions from my fellow steering committee members before we move forward?
Well, Sean and everyone, this is Naomi. I just wanted to let you know that I'll have to leave the call around 3:10. I have a broken finger I need to get fixed. I apologize in advance. I
understand completely.
Okay.
Any other medical issues or ASCO-related issues? All right. And again, I realize that there's a lot of distress in the committee about these measures, which I share. So we are going to try and do a different route or process forward. So moving on, the first thing that we need to do on our agenda is the review of competing and related measures. And my understanding, and again, for my NQF colleagues, correct me if I'm wrong, ideally we would like to have one sort of measure that addresses the same area and not competing measures and splitting the field. And there were two measures that have been, one which is already NQF endorsed, which is the NCQA's stewarded measure on the advanced care plan, that looked very similar to the UNC hospice and palliative care treatment preferences. And all of you should have received a document, a side-by-side comparison about those two. And what I'd like to do now is briefly turn things over either to Helen or Heidi just to explain the criteria by which we should think about harmonizing measures or perhaps selecting what would be the best in show or best in class measure. I guess it's best in class. Heidi, Helen, I'm not sure which one of you I can turn to.
Either. Heidi, what would you like? What's your question?
Just the criteria by which we look at harmonization of measures and what we should be thinking about as we look forward. Is
sure,
there more to add than what I said, I guess?
Yeah, I can take care of that. This is Helen, so thanks to all of you. We generally prefer to have a single measure that can cover as large a population of people as possible. We really do look towards the target of the measure as well as the focus of the measure. We understand at times that it's not possible always to have a single measure address a given population, and at times if it's necessary for data, underlying data issues or because of nuances of the population to need different measures, that's fine, but we do ask that they be harmonized. When we say harmonized, you're really talking about the evidence for the measure focus, the approach the different developers are taking, even if they might live in different data sources. The last thing we want to do is add to the cacophony that's already out there in terms of measures that are slightly different, slightly nuanced, but applicable to the same patient population. So as you look towards this, these measures have already passed your criteria for endorsement, the overall criteria for endorsement. The question for you would be, is there one that clearly has an advantage as you think about the four criteria? Is one more evidence-based? Is one more reliable, valid? Is one more usable? Is it applicable to a broader population? Is it on a data platform that might be broader and more applicable as well? And then the feasibility issues would be a concern, a consideration as well. We recognize not all measures can be combined, but that's certainly, you know, our preference would be to try to get the sort of maximal bang for the measure buck. But I think it's really a discussion at this point for the committee to look at the pros and cons of those measures in that context, really sticking to those criteria and help us see if there's a path forward.
Fantastic. Thanks, Helen. That's very helpful and said much better than I did. So I'd like to open it up for discussion for people who have thoughts, having reviewed both of these, and see if we can get them harmonized or selected one versus the other.
Well, this is June, and I just want to toss out it because, interestingly, I was in a conversation just yesterday trying to point out that there really are two different pieces of information as to whether someone has a surrogate decision maker versus someone having documentation of preferences for life-sustaining treatment.
Mm-hmm.
Now, so my concern with the advanced care plan versus, that one seems to be an or statement that they will, the numerator will include those who either have a surrogate decision maker documented or an advanced care plan. The UNC measure, on the other hand, doesn't seem to document a legal document such as an appointed decision maker or an advanced care plan, but rather simply documents whether or not preferences have been stated.
Mm-hmm.
So while I see them needing harmony, I don't see them as the same.
Okay.
This is Kate, and I would tend to go toward the UNC measure. And I picked up a little bit of what June was talking about in the advanced care plan. And The surrogate decision-making issues in California are ripe for some type of explosion because we don't really have any type of clear, definitive decision about who is considered a surrogate decision-maker. And this has actually come up around a lot of the work that we've done around physician orders for life-sustaining treatment. And some of the advocate groups in California have taken issue with, recruit the next of kin who's standing at the bedside who then becomes the surrogate decision maker. And then how do you actually make that become consistent in standard so that it can be equally interpreted as a quality measure that you actually have the right surrogate decision maker? So I think the NCQA-1 feels a little complicated to me, and the UNC approach feels a little bit more straightforward and maybe less open to interpretation. That's my thought.
So this is Solomon. So along the same lines that Kate was mentioning, the numerator instruction under the NCQA-1, where cultural or spiritual beliefs preclude, can I ask for a clarification of that? Is anybody able to?
Sure. This is Bob Rem at NCQA.
So can you tell me what that means?
I think that the motive here is to be able to capture that patient has said, my beliefs, you've had the discussion, but I don't want to document it, essentially is what it comes down to. And there are codes that can capture that that are identified in the specifications. So the purpose here is to make sure that we are respectful of that patient choice.
Yeah, the problem is that, like Kate says, unfortunately, that oftentimes or is too commonly used as an excuse.
Well, I can't speak to the evidence for that. I'm sure that it probably has occurred, but. Again, trying to be patient-centric here.
And I guess I would just, I would interject just a minute that unless Heidi tells me differently, the NCQA measure is already endorsed. So it's not about looking at endorsement issues for NCQA. It's really looking at whether these two measures can be harmonized, whether one should be recommended over the other.
Right, Sean, so I'm sorry, I didn't mean to criticize. Yeah, I'm sorry, I'm not trying to criticize an already existing endorsement, but in terms of pointing out the difference,
yeah.
I think, like Kate was saying, I think the UNC one is, a more updated version, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
So I would favor the UNC one in terms of it's just simpler, more straightforward, and less complicated.
This is Bob. I haven't heard anybody else comment on this, but I tend to favor the UNC one more. I don't know that I would want to give up the NCQA, but, the NCQA looks only at patients age 65 and older, and if I'm reading it right, and I happen to be on call for our consultation service this week, I've got 18 patients that I've seen so far, and 10 of them are below the age of 65.
Oh.
Seems to me that, and that's not unusual. I mean, I think that I don't want my comments to mean I would take away the NCQA one. I tend to favor the UNC measure. I think that we're trying to raise the quality of palliative care as it's practiced, and I think first focusing on palliative care teams who are providing that kind of secondary level of care beyond what maybe the primary oncologist or primary cardiologist is providing. And I think this we capture more of our patients that way, and we should be held to that standard as palliative care providers to make certain that we've done, robust documentation of care planning, life-sustaining preferences.
This is Mark Antman at the AMA. I'll defer to Bob or other colleagues at NCQA if they were going to reply to this, but since this measure was jointly developed between NCQA and PCPI, I think I can clarify that age range, if I may.
Sure, Mark. I was going to comment. Go ahead, and then I'll fill in if there's anything missing.
Okay. Thank you, Bob. I was simply going to say that the context of this measure being developed in the first place was this was a geriatric measure set work group that convened to look at measures that would be appropriate for the geriatric population. And so the work group was convened with the intent of focusing on that population specifically. Since this measure and since that whole measure set was developed, we have in fact, believe, developed measures that are comparable, if not identical to this one, in for other populations and with different age ranges. So by all means, we agree that provision of an advanced care plan shouldn't be limited to the geriatric population only. At this moment, I can't tell you the exact other populations or age ranges that it has been applied to, but we have used the same measure for other populations, and yes, for populations other than the geriatric. Bob, anything you would add to that?
Yeah, and I think that just to recall that the measure of the NCQA AMA-PCPI measure was submitted under a completely different call for measures. It was not intended to be submitted under the palliative care end of life. In fact, the whole purpose and intent of the measure is to make sure that people at some marker point in time, in this case it's 65, you know, think about and go through a process and have clinical support for advanced care planning well in front of any impending events that may come downstream. So from a measure intent perspective, the measure intent is quite distinct from the UNC measure, which focuses much further downstream. So I think that with that in mind, we would have not even seen this measure as appropriate for an end-of-life palliative care call for measures, because we see it as it's in fact one of our effective, it's a very similar to one of our effectiveness of care measures in our HEDIS data, and so therefore it's what should be done to a asymptomatic population, year 65, and here are some things that need to happen. And this was, you know, supported in great part by our work with CMS in our geriatric measurement development process. So that's kind of the background, if you will. And I think that's why these two measures are quite distinct and have two different purposes.
Well, this is Kate, and I think that's very helpful. And I guess the question that I'm not quite clear about is, given that this is already an endorsed measure,
right,
how do we then harmonize? I'm not quite sure of the mechanics of this.
Yep. And I can help with that. This is Helen. So basically what we would really like you to do today is take a look at these two measures. The PCPI measure is up for maintenance in the coming year, and we'll have an opportunity to go through this exact, you know, a detailed dive on that measure as well. It just wasn't in time for this project. And I think what we'd like you to do is make recommendations for how you think the measure can be harmonized further, if you think there is a benefit to having both. I mean, certainly there are different populations. One is more focused on the ambulatory side. One is more focused on hospital, hospice. So, I think the harmonization recommendations you make, we will flow to the next group who will be looking at that measure.
Helen, this is Sean. Can I take a crack at that?
Sure, please.
Because this has been extraordinarily helpful, and actually June and I had a conversation about this on another call, and June's point was extremely helpful. I actually think that these are two different measures looking at two different care processes. That advanced care planning really is, and I think the emphasis here is on advanced, as was just mentioned, that it's focused on the hypothetical. It's focused on the what if, and the key goal to that measure is identifying a proxy decision maker and at least identifying some big picture ideas about how people would want to be treated if the unforeseen happened.
Right.
And it's really focused on advanced care plan, and it's focused on what I call the worried well. Those for whom serious illness is a hypothetical rather than a reality. I look at the treatment preferences measure as much more focused not on the worried well, but the actually seriously ill.
And it's a much more drilled down, real-time measure that focuses on not what's going to happen 5, 10, 15 years out, but what's happening over the next day, week, or 6 months. And I think that they're both a different denominator, and they get at a different concept, and that they harmonize in that way. That advanced care planning really is for the worried well, and that the specific treatment preferences are for people who are really living with that serious illness.
That's very helpful, Sean.
Is that helpful?
Yeah, that's very helpful, although I do think it would be helpful, given that you are a group of experts who know this area well, to just offer if you think there are any ways perhaps that the NCQA PCPI measure could move sort of, you know, now that it's going to be up for maintenance as well, are there any suggestions this group would make that would help, you know, make the measure more relevant to 2012 and beyond?
Group?
And there may not be any. I just a question.
This is Naomi. Naomi Nierman. I need to always include my last name. The surrogate representative is not so much a problem in the hospice setting, it seems to me, because more often than not, we can identify a primary caregiver who at least is informed about what's going on. But in other settings, it may be a problem, so I think at least we need to have a definition of what that means. That take us further? My question?
Okay.
Yeah, I would agree with that. That would address some of the concerns that we've been hearing in California related to pulsed work. And another comment I would have in looking at the UNC measure is the specific inclusion of pulsed. It says documentation of preferences for life-sustaining treatments, of which that is what pulsed is. So I don't know if there would be any place to identify that specifically, as if a pulsed form is completed following a discussion, et cetera, and the signatures, that would qualify for meeting this this measure.
This is Rick Goldstein. I do think that the NCQA measure has one important element that we actually don't want to have in the UNC measure, which is, I think, there's strength in trying to promote these discussions before you're in the situation, not so much in the worried well, but just that it's a sensible conversation to have with your normal doctor when you're healthy but of age, that your risks go up. So to me, it would be important either to completely differentiate or to make sure that if we do harmonize this, that we don't undermine the importance of advanced care planning in kind of the ambulatory setting outside of sort of end-of-life decision-making. What that's worth.
Other thoughts for the group? And for my AMA and NCQA colleagues, does that work for you gentlemen?
I mean, you know, we always pay great interest to steering committee recommendations around measures. Again, I do think that when we first looked at this and had a preliminary call with the NQF team, we did see these as quite distinct, and I think some of the conversations have been able to more fully appreciate why these are addressing an important issue from different vantage points, and that, in fact, the populations are quite different. We're in many ways, for a measure to be feasible, and the reason that this measure really does rely quite extensively on codes that clinicians have available. I don't know if clinicians have codes that are currently available to identify surrogate decision maker or even have definitions around that. So while at a patient-clinician level, understanding who and who is not a surrogate decision maker, this has been given, you know, authority to make medical decisions in particular, not just financial, you know, this is almost gets very esoteric quite quickly. And again, a lot of the art of measure development is in capturing what you can capture and making sure that that tells an important story and leads to higher quality and better patient outcomes. So this is the balancing act, and I'm sure, you know, as a steering committee panel, you face with this all the time, trying to fully appreciate that there is a balance between great specificity and then usability and feasibility.
We agree.
And this is Mark Antman at the AMA. I think Bob Rem summarized things nicely. I would just add that we at the PCPI also value recommendations from the NQF steering committee. So as Helen noted, when this measure is up for maintenance, we'll by all means take the recommendations of this committee into very careful consideration. Thank you.
Thanks. Is everybody okay if we move forward then?
Yes.
And Heidi, Helen, are you okay with this?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Oh, just one question, though. I think the comment was we were going to make recommendations. Do you consider us as having made recommendations, or is there a further written process that we will engage in?
I'm sorry, who was that?
That was Kate.
Oh, I'm sorry, Kate.
We'd be happy to get formal written comments on the measure if you'd like, and we'd be delighted to share that with NCQA and PCPI.
Okay, thanks.
Because obviously the level of detail was pretty minimal on the call. I'm sure they'd appreciate that as they update the measure.
So if we could, if people have thoughts about that, if you could drop that off to Lindsay and Eric, that would be fabulous. And could I just make a request that people identify themselves by name when they talk? Because it's just hard to put names to faces when the faces aren't in front of me.
Agreed.
Thanks, guys. Okay, so we are going to move on to the harmonized pain measures. These were two measures, one submitted by RAND on patients with advanced cancer assessed for pain in an outpatient visit, and then the pain screening that had been proposed by the UNC group. Again, I hope that you've got the side-by-side document, and the RAND and UNC group have worked to update their numerators, harmonized them, and I guess the question is this okay with all of you folks, and do you have any other concerns with the materials presented? Did I miss anything from my NQF colleagues?
No, I think you nailed it. Thank you.
It's Rick Goldstein. I have one concern if we're going to merge the two, which is that from a primary care provider perspective, an encounter for a flu shot would, as I understand it, be included. So I wonder if we could have some language that would exclude low-complexity visits, either a 211 or a 212, that wouldn't be considered as part of the denominator. Does that sound legitimate?
This is Neil Winger. Can I chime in?
Please.
These are harmonized but not merged, right? And
yeah.
The denominator, I assume you're talking about the RAND measure, would require it's a cancer-related visit.
Well, it says with primary care, so it would still be listed as their diagnosis, right?
Neil, this is Carol. It does include primary care visits as well.
Right.
Right. But I don't think it's something that was just a flu shot generally, isn't that usually a nurse visit?
211, it's an encounter that's built for.
Well,
Sorry, go ahead, Neil.
The conceptualization of this is that it is a primary care visit that in some way would be related to a patient-physician interaction and not a visit for a vaccination.
That's why I'm suggesting that if you, were to cut out all the visits just for a vaccine. Maybe they come in for a pneumovax also because of their disease state, but where you wouldn't expect that it was a complicated encounter, or the G-tube needs just a replacement. those are lower level interactions where it wouldn't be fair to expect this kind of screening, whereas any richer interaction in a primary care setting would be coded at a higher level of complexity, so 91213 or above. Just, I think it'll strengthen the measure. From a primary care perspective, if you include all those visits, then a practice that's striving to be more of a medical home and a first stop for a lot of small things would look worse by this measure rather than better if we just kind of cut out those lower skilled visits.
Right. Well, I mean, it certainly isn't the intention to include the very brief nurse visits. I'm actually trying to look to see whether we included codes in here, and I don't see them. So maybe what you're saying is that when in fact the codes are included, we should be careful to make sure that they don't include the lowest level.
There are five levels, and I would exclude the two lowest complexity visits because even if it's meeting with a physician, there wouldn't be an opportunity necessarily to have that conversation.
So, Neil, I guess what I'm hearing, I just want to, is when the codes are included moving forward, if we just exclude the low complexity, you know, flu shot visits, is that okay with your group, or are there unintended consequences of doing that we should be aware of?
I'm not aware of any unintended consequences. In fact, that statement is consistent with the way that we have implemented this from a chart perspective. Using codes from a medical record, from administrative data or encounter perspective, that makes perfect sense. I'm a little bit sure about the 90212 code.
I'm not sure about it either, but it's a decision to be made about. It's actually I think it's a decision about the specificity of the measure.
Right. It may very well make sense to exclude both 01 and 2.
Okay. Rick, that's very helpful. Thank you for catching that. Any other questions about the harmonization that RAND and UNC have proposed? Hearing none. Neil, thank you so much. And I'm not sure who's on from UNC. I didn't. But thank you very much, and I would propose that we move forward if that's all right with people. So I'm going to turn things over to June to go through really 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 measures and questions that we have to address from the next set. June, is that all right?
Well, all right, we'll go
starting
on.
With spiritual concerns, and I can jump in if need be.
Yes, thank you. Okay, so the first measure that we were not able to complete at the meeting was a number 1647. That's a documentation of spiritual and religious concerns. There apparently was some question about the reliability of that documentation, and did we request that information, and it has not come? Is that my understanding of the meeting notes? I'm looking at page 16 of the meeting notes, where it says that we're awaiting response on two questions for the developer, data on reliability testing, and
this is the time for that response. They've updated the measure submission form, and I think there's somebody from data on the phone.
We are on the phone, and this is Martha Tekka from Data. Becky Van Voorst is also with us on the phone. I was unaware that you had still open questions, so I hope I'm prepared to answer them here.
If you don't mind summarizing what you've provided additional into the form, I think that's really what we're looking for you to do here. Just summarize, if you don't mind.
Sure. And Becky, since you do you want to speak to that?
It's in AD9 at the end.
Sure, I'm just trying to pull this up. It's been just a little while since.
Yeah, sorry, we weren't sure exactly what you guys were doing, and don't have the specific documentation in front of us. I apologize.
My recollection was that we were interested in whether there was some relationship between the measure and an outcome.
Right, right. No, we remember the question. We did a couple of different things. We did some clarification on the definition and background information with Laura Hansen. We had a conference call with the folks from NQF and with Laura Hansen, who provided some additional information. We also looked at data that we had at from our performance measurement database that included not only the measure in question, which is did you have a documented conversation about spiritual concerns, but also we looked at that alongside a measure that we also have for spiritual distress, and that's measured at different time periods, that shows change in spiritual distress over time. And we did a quick analysis of that data, and we presented the results of that demonstrated for those folks who had a reduction in their spiritual distress, a higher percentage, I'm going to have said this wrong, a higher percentage of the folks who did have discussions, a documented discussion of spiritual concern, had a reduction in their spiritual distress scores,
yep,
than the percentage of folks who did not have the discussion but had a reduction in spiritual distress scores. So that's a sort of summary. Becky, have you got the data to support that in front of you?
Yeah, no, that data I don't have in front of me, though I can, let me see if I can pull it up. Going back to the reliability question, my understanding is that data itself did not do any reliability testing on this measure, but this measure was tested in the PEACE project, and that was the data that we submitted.
The Laura, yeah.
And had, correct.
You know, this is Bob Fine in Dallas. I was afraid maybe one of the lone people that really liked this in the beginning. So I happen to have your analysis of the 652 records that you looked at, and it's 63% of the patients whom you documented spiritual discussion had improvements in their spiritual distress score. 37% whom you documented discussion did not have an improvement in your distress score.
That's
and I like this measure all along. Flawed though it is, I think it's a start, and I appreciate you gathering the data because I think it helps us, or helps make, for people like me that think we need to be doing this more, it helps make the case that it's beneficial. I realize this is not a randomized controlled trial and all, but...
Right, and I want to be clear. We weren't... We're just trying to support with what the data that... could, you know, lend some support in that direction.
This is Naomi Nierman. I just wanted to comment that in the research we've done with consumers, this is one of the pieces of information that they would like to know about hospice care in advance. Does the hospice do a good job with this particular service? So it is, if we're discussing at all usability or importance, I'd like to add to that it seems to us that it is.
This is Tina Pickey, and I wanted to express my appreciation to Data for the additional information that you did provide regarding the Peace Project and the AIM Project and the use of the spiritual distress score. I was interested in perhaps that my question was already answered about what percent of surveys actually included the spiritual distress as one of the documented symptoms, since I know there are optional symptoms for them to report on that survey. And then my other comment would be, and, you know, my hope would be that this single measure could include palliative care consulted patients, not just hospice patients, but perhaps that's beyond the reach of this particular measure. And in the comments, I noticed that there was a comment about if the measure was used for public reporting, that it would be important to include a definition of spiritual needs and what constitutes that discussion of these needs, and, you know, where that documentation would be located in the patient record. And I would hope that that definition and what constitutes a discussion of spiritual needs would be spelled out whether or not it was being used for public reporting. So those are just my comments.
Well, this is June, and just to make sure we're on track in terms of what we still need to do, as a group at the meeting, we were able to vote on the importance and determine that it met the criteria for importance. It sounds certainly from the discussion today, there's no one that's spoken up who has challenged whether or not this measure has importance. So what we have left to vote on after our discussion is over today and we get the Survey Monkey, we'll be voting on the scientific acceptability, usability, and feasibility of the measure. We table that discussion at our face-to-face meeting, waiting for the additional information on the measure. We have the additional information now. Is there anyone present on the phone call from the steering committee who believes that there are any questions that we need answered from the developers before, as individuals, we'll be able to use the Survey Monkey and vote on this measure?
This is Solomon. Can I just ask an administrative question?
Please. That's what this is about.
Yeah, so when we talk about scientific acceptability, can I ask sort of what the denominator is? Because I know we've had a little bit of a discussion at the in-person meeting, you know, about the sort of relative availability of scientific evidence in palliative care compared to other areas of medicine. You know, so, you know, we've talked about that, especially like with this topic of spiritual care, that, you know, we're never going to have randomized controlled trials. So can you give us a little help in terms of what is the denominator of scientific acceptability?
Well, I'm not quite sure what you're asking in terms of the denominator of scientific acceptability.
Should we be comparing it to? I mean, a topic like this.
Mm-hmm. I think, and I may be misinterpreting your question, but I think perhaps what you're asking is related to, since this may not be as sophisticated a tool as we might like to see for a topic, is the fact that what we're proposing here is the documentation of a discussion, is that, you know, sort of as a baseline, as a beginning measure, is that good enough? Is that what you're asking?
Right. I guess my question is, what is good enough? When we say this measure is going to be, like you said, as a beginning, first step, going to be good enough, I don't understand what good enough is.
Well, I think, I mean, my personal opinion on this, and again, it's June trying to to make sure that I'm getting at what your question is about, is that, yes, it would be great if we had an accepted spiritual assessment tool and we were ready for that, but we don't. I think that having a quality measure that, to use the word at least, measures whether or not a spiritual discussion took place or whether it did not take place because it wasn't appropriate, at least measuring that occurrence or justification for non-occurrence is better than nothing. I think it is a first step that I would support, but that's, and in some ways that's the discussion we had at the face-to-face meeting, and that we agreed with the importance.
This is Bob Fine. I thought at our face-to-face meeting, though, that I thought I heard Sean say, and maybe somebody else, that the committee could still vote, in essence, vote our conscience if we thought we needed to go with the measure, even if the science behind it was not optimal by NQF standards. Now, maybe I misunderstood that, but I thought we technically had the authority to vote kind of for whatever we wanted. Did I misunderstand that, Sean?
You know, vote your conscience is clearly one of my taglines, but I don't know that I would. I'm not sure that I said that specifically.
Okay.
I think, well, you know, speaking, my concern is that I think it's very hard not to support a measure that is as, you know, motherhood and apple pie as spirituality. I guess my concern about moving beyond the importance of this measure, which we're going to be voting on in the future, about scientific acceptability, usability, and feasibility, is that I'm not sure that there, it's a straight documentation process measure without data that suggests that there's a link to an outcome that is beneficial. And, you know, we do a lot of documentation in medicine for many reasons. And I guess my question is simply documenting something enough to make this scientifically acceptable, usable, and, you know, certainly feasible when there's not data behind it that suggests it leads to improved patient or family outcomes?
Well, again, Sean, how much data? They've got their 652 retrospective analysis where of the ones they documented spiritual discussion, they showed two-thirds improved, one-third no improvement, and the ones where there was no documentation, it was basically flat, 48% improved, 52% no improvement. Look, that's not a randomized controlled trial. It's a retrospective analysis of a tool where they weren't planning on doing that in advance. But, again, it gets to the point where I fear sometimes we may let the ideal be the enemy of the real. And I know I'm being a bit of an advocate here, but I'm advocating that this is not a bad first step. Final step.
And this is where I would probably come back and say vote your conscience. I think the issue, you know, the contralateral side to that is that any measurement, any time you ask people to measure, it's at the expense of something else.
Sure.
And so that's where, again, from my perspective, the issue of are there enough data, and it certainly doesn't have to be RCT data, but are there enough strong data to support doing that at the expense of something else that's valuable? And that's
we've lost our six ASCO measures or whatever, so maybe we've got time.
Well, but actually, this is Steve. That was going to be my question, is when we lost those six ASCO measures, was that because of lack of data, or was that because they didn't have it in the proper format so it could be evaluated? Because part of the issue I still have is one of the folks who does, you know, end-of-life cancer care every day, is that I have no issue with this topic in terms of the spirituality. But if we lost our six or seven ASCOs because they didn't have good data, but we're going to say just vote your conscience on this one,
then I want to go back to the oncology ones. So if it was a formatting issue on those, fine, but if it was a data issue, then it might seem to some of us like a little bit of a double standard.
Well, this is June. I think that I don't quite apply it, see it as a double standard. The issue with ASCO, first of all, they withdrew the measures. Second of all, the data that was missing was data to establish a benchmark so that they could be used for accountability. And what that data, if you will, is not at issue here. The issue here is whether the data is adequate to demonstrate a link between the measurement and good patient outcomes, or, you know, a leak between what we're saying is everybody should have documentation in their chart, and the data that they have provided us is the best data they have to demonstrate that if everyone had documentation in their chart, those who were spiritually distressed would have a better chance of being less spiritually distressed. So it's the case that we have some data here that suggests a link between the measurement and outcome. With the ASCO measures, first of all, ASCO had to withdraw them, chose to withdraw them. Second of all, we were looking for data that we don't have, but it was data about what constitutes a good benchmark. How many, what proportion of cancer patients appropriately should be in the ICU and what proportion shouldn't be. So we had a very different data question for those two measures.
And if I could add something, this is Helen, just to put the vote your conscience in the context of our criterion, we do specifically have an option under the evidence ratings, and we talked about this at the in-person meeting as well, that, you know, in addition to looking at the quality, the quantity, the consistency of the evidence, the task force can use their expert, the steering committee can use their expert judgment to say that they still think that the benefits significantly outweigh any downside risks for a given measure for a given population. I think that's what you're referring to. So that was very appropriate here.
That's very well stated. That's what I was recalling. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Are we finished with questions for the spirituality measure?
Well, I'm sorry. This is Solomon. Not sure I still got a really good answer to my initial question. So I'm happy to vote my conscience. But if we're all going to be voting on conscience, like Steve pointed out, then what's the whole point of having a standardized NQF procedure?
No, you're voting your expert opinion, Solomon.
Yes.
I was wrong to state vote your conscience. I really was too flippant, and that was incorrect of me. But I think what was stated just before then, that we are permitted to use our expert opinion on topics if we think maybe the other justification isn't optimal, but we think the topic's important enough. And I think the data people have reached out to us. They've not withdrawn the measure. They've done a retrospective analysis. They've tried to show us, look, interestingly, we went back and looked at this, and we think that there's a positive outcome from assessing people's spirituality, asking the question. And you know, we talk in pain management all the time. If we don't assess it, we can't treat it. I'm just advocating that we start trying to hold ourselves and others to the standard of saying you ought to assess it. And the preliminary retrospective analysis we have is that when you assess it, you're more likely to have an improvement in your spiritual distress score. And my suspicion is that because if you assess it, you start to talk about it. So I don't think it's just voting your conscience. I wish I hadn't said that, and I apologize.
Well, so I'm sorry. So, I'm happy to vote based upon my background, but I guess maybe to frame it or phrase it a different way, you know, when I asked about the denominator and numerator, I'm trying to get more for myself a sense of relative percentage or ratio of what we have in front of us versus what we can, in a perfect world, like you said, expect to eventually ever get. So to maybe address Steve's concern, you know, like with cancer or with ASCO, the potential for getting data is a whole lot larger than the potential that we'll ever get much more data for spiritual care. So I have no qualms asking ASCO to provide a whole lot more data than asking for data on spiritual care. But my question is more of what's the relative scale? I mean, is this, you know, is getting halfway there acceptable for us to say this is a good start? Is 80% the threshold? I mean, I just don't really have a good feel of what threshold should we be using to say this is an adequate first start.
I think this is where your expert opinion has to come in to bear. Given them the what this measure is purporting to capture, do we have adequate data to support that there's a link between measuring this and desirable patient outcomes? And the definition of adequate has to be your definition in this case. This is a documentation measure. It's not a, you know, it's not a survey tool or any other kind of measure that would give us a score or anything like that. This is a measure of whether or not there's been a discussion. And the developers have provided us with data that if there has been a discussion, they find better outcomes. And our expert opinion has to be whether or not the data they have provided us is adequate for this purpose.
So, and again, I'm, you know, happy to do that, but I'm just a little uncomfortable as a voting member to base it on just my own personal individual threshold or criteria. I mean, what I'm asking is, you know, can we have a discussion? Can the committee achieve some sort of consensus? Can staff provide us some guidance as to, I mean, at least some ballpark of where that threshold should be so we have some sort of semblance of standardization as a committee,
yeah,
rather than each of us voting whatever our own personal feelings are?
So let me try this one more time. This is Helen. I think it's a very good discussion. You will have the option of specifically looking at the quality, the quantity, and consistency of the evidence. You may vote those down, but then you may also indicate that you think, in spite of the fact that you rated those low, you still think there's a specific question you're going to be asked about. You still think that based on your expert opinion, the measure benefits outweigh the risks. We'll describe that to the, you know, the broader community when that measure goes out for comment. This measure may not have met the criteria for evidence, but the expert panel felt strongly, and I'm just adding words here, that, you know, this should be endorsed in spite of the evidence available to date. We'll have all that information. We'll feed all that back to you, and you can try to get more of a group consensus. But at this point, I think it's just to try to get through the issues and allow you a chance to vote.
This is Naomi Nierman. I just want to comment that, first of all, I'm not sure that we can say that this is a personal opinion. It's really more of a technical expertise opinion. That's a distinction. But also, expert opinion is acceptable in as evidence when other data are not available, especially in this context when random studies are very difficult. So I don't think it's out of turn to think about this as an expert opinion.
Agreed.
And ultimately, I think it's our collective expert opinion. We will all cast a vote, and we'll all live with the results of that. None of it hinges upon any one vote, but it's the collective wisdom of the crowd, so to speak. And again, I realize I've been speaking as an advocate for this now at a second meeting, but I don't think, Solomon, there's a ideal answer to your question. This is one of those areas of nuance in interpretation where I trust your expert judgment. I hope you trust mine. And we may not agree with each other, but I would say that we're both expert in this field, and there are 20 other experts in the field, and we'll all vote, and that'll be that. I don't think there's a perfect answer to what you're asking, personally.
This is Martha Tekka from Data. Just one more, if I might, one more just piece of data. I'm not sure whether it was clear or is helpful about this. Again, the importance of this and or the link to the outcome. But of only 17% of the patients reported said they did not have spiritual distress. Of those with a spiritual discussion, 80% of them, with a documented spiritual discussion, 80% of them have spiritual distress. So that's just, again, I guess you started saying that there was no real question about whether the concept of spiritual care or a spiritual discussion is important, but then the link to the kind of care seemed unclear, so I'm not sure if that particular data is helpful or not. But it's a big chunk of patients who do experience, of course, spiritual distress.
Okay, I think at this point, unless there's a different question, we need to accept the fact, perhaps, that this our judgment of the adequacy of the data is something that we will be voting on, but then separately we will also vote on whether or not the measure should be endorsed, and collectively all of our voting should, according to, isn't it the Brown prophecy formula, should come closer to the truth than if any one of us individually made that decision. So I think we, unless we have a different question, ought to go on to the next measure that we have to deal with today.
June, this is Kate. I just have a question about members who are not on the call but are still members of this committee. Will everyone be voting on this measure, or only the people who are on the call today to have the updated information and conversation?
Well, everybody's got the updated information. Lindsay and Karen, does everyone vote?
Yeah, everybody does vote, and we'll send out just a very brief bulleted summary of this conversation for the people who aren't able to make the call, and send out a more detailed summary later on, but just so that they have the information you all discuss.
Okay, thank you.
And that's one of the reasons why we don't have voting on the call, because we realize that not every time works for everyone.
Okay, so moving on to Measure 0208, Family Evaluation of Hospice Care. We had a question about the numerator that was clarified by the measure developer. Is this clarification enough? Is everyone content that they now understand that the numerator, if you look at the information, the numerator statement is a composite score weighed from the responses of 17 items on the sex survey. Is everyone comfortable with this information? And are we able to finish our voting on this item? Somehow I've lost my copy of our report to see what aspects we have left to vote on.
There's nothing left to vote on this measure. You already made the recommendation for endorsement. It was just a clarification you asked for from the measure developer.
Okay.
Whether this is acceptable.
Right. So part of the survey will just ask you if you want to you feel that they've met what you asked for and whether you want to continue to recommend.
This is Carol Spence. Part of the updating that we did was because this was a measure that had current approval, so this was maintenance. I focus in providing both the information on importance and in the scientific acceptability session, we focus primarily on the composite score. And Dr. Gentino requested that we put additional information in on the original work that she did on reliability and validity in particular. So those were the primary updating that was done was in relation to those, plus a little additional information on disparities that was inadvertently left out of the original submission. So this was mostly supplementary material as opposed to material that was directly addressing issues and concerns that the committee had.
Okay, does anyone on the conversation have additional questions that were not resolved, or are we in general comfortable that the additional information has been helpful?
No additional questions. This is Kate.
Okay, hearing no additional questions. Then our next item is the CARE, number 1632. Again, the evidence was updated and the numerator was clarified. Are these changes acceptable, and are there any other questions that we have about this measure?
This is Kate. I don't have any additional questions.
Hearing no additional questions, we'll move on then to measure 1617, patients treated with an opioid who are given a bowel regimen, and the evidence regarding the population targeted by this measure was updated. Are we content with that, and is there any other discussion around this measure that we need to have now? Hearing no questions on that, are we just moving along because everybody's wanting to move along, or are we finished with it?
So June, this is Kate. So these are measures we've already approved, but we just asked for additional information.
Yes,
that's correct.
Okay.
I just want to make sure the additional information meets everybody's needs.
Okay.
Yeah, and this is Douglas Ney. I actually did look at this in detail and reported on it in the meeting, and I highlighted the additional information relative to the summary of evidence that was provided, as well, and some information from the Peace Project and personal communication from Dr. Hansen, and it all looked very supportive. In addition to the fact that we did vote in support of this measure.
Thank you for that reassurance for the rest of us. Okay, and then our final measure to determine whether we're pleased with the updated information provided was on measure number 1625, those hospitalized patients who die an expected death with an ICD that has been deactivated. Does anyone have any questions about the updated information that was provided?
No, I think this is another case where the measure's really improved with the update.
Mm-hmm. Terrific. Terrific. Okay. Well, if that is the completion of our review of updated materials, we now are ahead of schedule but open for public comment.
And I think all lines are already open. Is that correct, Robbie?
Yes, that is correct.
Okay. So if anyone has any comments.
So this is Sean. Hearing no more further comment, can I turn things over to the good Dr. Ginsberg for next steps?
Yes. I'm going to pass it over to Lindsay, who's going to be sending you an email soon.
Boy, that was quite a quick handoff, Karen.
Sure. Before the weekend, we'll send you an email with a link to a SurveyMonkey that will ask you for your vote. The measure 1647, the data spirituality measure, will be the only measure that we ask for your vote on all of the NQF criteria. So that will be similar to what you've seen before prior to the in-person meeting, the longer survey, where we do have room for you to input your own text as to justifying your vote. That would be particularly important for us if, as you're going through the importance to measure and report section, just based on the conversation you've had today. Anything that you want to put in there in the free text spaces, we would greatly appreciate as we go to write the draft report. The competing and related measures, if you have any information that you want to send to us over email for NCQA, certainly feel free to. The harmonized pain measures will just be a simple, are you okay with the harmonization that took place? The remaining measures also just be, do you still recommend these measures for endorsement based on the updated evidence that, or information that was provided by the measure developers? We'll ask for you guys for a pretty quick turnaround on that survey response just because we are working on a timeline to get the draft report posted for member and public comment on October 7th. So don't be alarmed when we're asking for your responses probably by midweek next week. Short of that, we will be working to pull together a draft report, which we'll send out to you all for your review. And we're, again, looking to post that on October 7th for member and public comment, which will be a 30-day period. And then after that, we'll be looking to schedule more calls with you all, so we're not done yet.
So, Lindsay, this is Sean. Just for the group, just before we all say goodbye, after the 30 days public comment, could you just remind us about the next stages of the process and where things go after that?
Sure. All the comments that we receive will either filter off to the measure developers if they need to provide a response, or if there are more for the steering committee, we'll provide them to you all. We'll have a conference call where we review the measure developers' responses to the comments received and also allow you all to come up with any additional responses. Based on your recommendations from that call, we'll make modifications to the draft report, and then at that point we'll post it for NQF member voting. That'll be 15 days, and right now that is looking to fall in mid-November. Before the voting starts, we'll be doing a quick webinar that allows people to come on and address any comments that they have about the draft report. We'll ask Sean and June to be present on that webinar, though the rest of you are welcome to attend if you would like. We'll have a member from our Consensus Standards Approval Committee on there. It'll be open to the NQF members to address any questions or comments they have about the report. Voting will be for 15 days. We see that we have that ending, I think early December is when it's ending now, or mid-December. And then after that, the report will go to the NQF CSAC and board for endorsement recommendations on the measures.
Fantastic. Thanks, Lindsay. I just wanted to... A lot of people have asked about what happens next, so I just thought it'd be great for all of you to hear on it. So I think, unless there are any things that June and I missed, we can adjourn a little bit early today. And just again, our profound thanks for all of your time and effort on this. I know it's been a very long process, but the end is clearly in sight. And again, my personal thanks to everybody at NQF who has made this just remarkably easy to get through. So thanks, guys, so much for that. And any last comments or thoughts before we leave?
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Have a great weekend, everybody.
Thanks. Come on.
Bye.
Bye-bye.